If you would, take your Bibles and turn to the book of Nehemiah. We're going to focus on that book tonight and study it. The book of Nehemiah is actually a continuation of the book of Ezra. The two books, Ezra and Nehemiah, were originally believed to be written as one book. This actually started in some of the Hebrew Bibles, very old ones. It actually started in 2 Chronicles 35. And then ended through Nehemiah. So the last two chapters of 2 Chronicles, Ezra and Nehemiah were actually one book, but they got divided over time into a different way, in a different division. The book of Nehemiah, one of the reasons why it was separated out into a separate book is because it is clearly written by Nehemiah. Unlike the book of Ezra, which was written by Ezra himself. You go over to Nehemiah chapter 1. Starts out at the very first verse. It says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hechaliah. So these are Nehemiah's accounts. And it's written, for the most part, in the first person, from his point of view. Ezra chapter 2, if you look at verses 1 through 70 of that chapter, and then compare to Nehemiah chapter 7, starting with verse 5 and going down to verse 73, they're two very similar accounts, showing that both authors, both Ezra and Nehemiah, had access basically to the same events and to the same records, and both of them record those same type of things. Now, in the book of Ezra, which we talked about previously, Ezra basically dealt with the spiritual restoration or the religious restoration of Israel. Nehemiah, though, focuses on more of the restoration of Israel's government as they came back from captivity. Nehemiah himself was a servant of Artaxerxes the First, who was the son of Ahasuerus, and that was the man who had married Esther. So he's, just so that you have it somewhat in a historical timeline, Nehemiah is taking place during the son of Esther's husband, during his reign. So these things take place after the book of Esther. Nehemiah was Artaxerxes' cupbearer. In other words, it was his job to taste the king's drink to make sure that the king wouldn't be poisoned by somebody slipping something into the drink. And it appears also that as the cupbearer, as one who is trusted enough to make sure the king would survive, he was also an advisor to the king as well. And also what we find as we read through the book of Nehemiah is that he served as a governor of Judea in Jerusalem for about 12 years. As far as the time span takes place, it takes place about 94 years after the very first return. So the various returns from captivity, there were actually three rounds which sent the Israelites into captivity. And there are three rounds of them returning from captivity as well. And this is, Nehemiah covers the third time. It takes place, if you look at chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, and it came about in the month of Nisan, at the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that the wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So it begins with the 20th year of Artaxerxes' reign, and he returns in the 32nd year in chapter 13, and in verse 6. Chapter 13 and verse 6, and it says, during all this time, I was not in Jerusalem, for the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I had gone to the king. After some time, however, I asked leave from the king. So he had returned basically 12 years later. And then he returned some days afterwards back to Jerusalem after making his report to, as far as we know, living out his days in Jerusalem. What's interesting is there are several archaeological documents that basically support some of the things that happened in Nehemiah, some of the things that are mentioned. We have found some actual records. There's a document that's known as the Elephantine Papyri, and in that, I can't tell you where, I can't read it, but in that document, which a piece of it is shown, is mentioned Sanballat, who's mentioned in Nehemiah chapter 2 and verse 19. Sanballat was the prior governor in Judea before Nehemiah came. Nehemiah 2 verse 19 says, "And Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, Geshem the Arab heard it, and they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" Also is mentioned in this document is Jehoiakim, who's also mentioned in Nehemiah 6 and verse 18. It says, "For many in Judea were bound by the oath to him because he was son-in-law to Shechaniah, the son of Arab, and his son, Jehoiakim, was married to the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah." And Jehoiakim is mentioned in his documents. In that is document also it mentions that Nehemiah's replacement names a man named Bigvia as Nehemiah's replacement after Nehemiah leaves. So all this is all mentioned in there. One particular account says the Elephantine Papyri is a collection of ancient Jewish manuscripts dating from the 5th century B.C. They came from a Jewish community at Elephantine, an island in the Nile at the border of Nubia. Translation of Elephantine Papyri says, "We have also set forth the whole matter in a letter in our name to Deliah and Shelemiah, the sons of Sanballat, the governor of Samaria. Furthermore, Erasenes, the Persian satrap, knew nothing of all that was perpetuated on us in the 20th year of Meshurim, or sorry, Meshurwan, the 17th year of Darius the king." So it mentions things in this that basically coincides with things that are found in Nehemiah. Another thing that's interesting is that there was a wall. Actually, we'd known the wall to exist, but for a long while they had thought it was dated to another time. Just recently, not all that long ago, they started digging and found pottery and stuff like that underneath the wall that dates it very firmly into Nehemiah's time. So in other words, we found pieces of Nehemiah's wall in archaeology. Been identified by Dr. Eliot Mezer in 2007. That's what the dig looks like. You can see the wall pretty well from that picture. Here's a close-up shot of a portion of the wall as they were digging on it. And also we have, if you want to know where it's at, that's where the location of it, that dig is right here. That first shot was shown. So they found a portion of it with some towers. What's also of interest, there's some towers on the edges, which were probably also mentioned in Nehemiah as far as the guards being done. The Kidron Valley is down here. The Dung Gate into Jerusalem is up above in modern Jerusalem. And most of the beginning of Nehemiah is dealing with the building of that wall. One of the contemporary prophets during the time of Nehemiah was Malachi. And many of the problems that are mentioned in Nehemiah as occurring with the Israelites are specifically denounced by Malachi. And so we know that those were probably contemporary writers between the two. So let's talk about it as an overview what the book is about. The first six chapters of Nehemiah. So Nehemiah, move this out of the way. We're going to write this down. So Nehemiah's chapters 1 through 6 have to do with the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. And when you first think about it, you say, well, of course they would have to put walls around the town. It's not that big of a deal. But it was much more important than that. Walls in those days were very much critical because of the safety of the city. But what Nehemiah records is the trouble that they had in building those walls. And that's why there's so much detail about it in the first six chapters. In chapter 1 of Nehemiah, Nehemiah hears about the fact that the walls are still down in Jerusalem. Even though the two rounds of captives have returned to Jerusalem, nothing has been done as far as putting up any safety for the inhabitants. And in chapter 1, starting with verse 1, it says, the words of Nehemiah, the son of Hilkiah. Now it happened in the month of Shezlub, the 20th year, that I was in Susa, the capital, that Hananiah, the one of my brothers, and some men from Judah came, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity about Jerusalem. And they said to me, the remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach. And the walls of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire. Now it came about, when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. And I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. So Nehemiah is very upset that his brethren, even though they had been back in Jerusalem, still did not have safety. And as we go later through the book, we also find that Jerusalem basically has not, for the most part, been repopulated. Most of the city has remained empty because there is no protection there, even though that was the capital of Israel. And so he goes to the king and requests for permission to rebuild those walls, and it's granted to him. So chapter 1 is basically about getting permission from the king. In chapter 2, King does give his permission at the beginning of the chapter, and it says, and it came about in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that the wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, why is your face sad, though you're not sick? Is there nothing but sadness of heart? Then I was very much afraid. And I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate, and its gates have been consumed by fire? Then the king said to me, what would you request? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. Then the king said to me, and the queen sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that it may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me the timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple, for the walls of the city, and for the house for which I will go. And the king granted them to me because of the good hand of God was on me. So then Nehemiah then recruits help for this project. And in chapter 2, verse 16, says, and the officials did not know that I had gone and what I had done, or as I had told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did not work. Then I said to them, you see the bad situation we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate, and its gates are burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we may no longer be a reproach. And I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which he had spoken to me. Then they said, let us arise and build. And so they put their hands to the good work. One of the things I want you to notice, Nehemiah is doing this based on faith. There is no prophet coming up to Nehemiah and says, this is what God answered to your prayer. Nehemiah prayed, and then on the basis of faith, reached out, hoping that this is what God wanted, that he was in agreement with it. And when things went his way, he saw that as God being in favor of the project, and the people understood that as well. You know, they didn't require somebody, some prophet coming back, well, God says this is what you need to do all the time. Nehemiah is much, much like we are today, when we have to pray and then reach out on the faith that our prayers will be answered. And this is what Nehemiah did. And the people responded to Nehemiah's faith. He said, I asked, got permission. God must be behind us. And the people said, yes, let's do this. But there was opposition to it. The first set of opposition was basically that of by intimidation. We're going to talk about the opposition in greater detail, so I'm just going to read through it real quick just to show you what it's like, but we're going to talk about it in greater detail later. It says, but when Sanballat the Horonite, which we know Sanballat used to be the governor before Nehemiah basically came and kicked him out of office, so we can see some of the motivation, and Tobiah the Ammonite official and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, what is this thing that you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will rise and build. But you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem. So Nehemiah answers the opposition. You don't have any say in this matter. They try to intimidate, saying, you don't have any permission. You don't have the rights to do this. And Nehemiah basically says, you have no right to oppose us. You don't even have any stake in this city. You don't even have people buried here. You're from other countries. In Nehemiah chapter 3, so chapter 2 is the inspection of the walls, basically. And recruiting of the people. Chapter 3, then, is a list of all the major workers. So Nehemiah chapter 3 then gives us a list of the builders. And it details exactly who did what. And we find, you know, lots of interesting little facts. You know, women were working right alongside the men. Fathers with their sons. People of different skills, different trades, each working on the wall. Chapters 4 through 6 is the continued opposition. That was brought against Nehemiah, trying to stop the work. In chapters 4, and starting with verse 1, the next thing they tried, they couldn't intimidate them just to give up before they even started. Now that the work starts, they try to do ridicule. In chapter 4, verse 1, it says, now it came about that when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. And he spoke in the presence of his brothers and the wealthy men of Samaria and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish it in a day? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burnt ones? Now Tobiah the Ammonite was near him, and he said, even what they were building, if a fox should jump on it, he would break their stone wall down. Hear, O our God, how we are despised. Return their reproach on their own heads, and give them up for plunder in the land of captivity. Do not forgive their iniquity, and do not let their sins be blotted out before thee. For they had demoralized the builders. So he built the wall, and the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Despite their mockings, despite the fact that Nehemiah acknowledges the fact that they did get demoralized, it did bother them, yet they continued to work. And they got the wall half built, despite the opposition, despite the taunting, the teasing. Now when that doesn't work, what do people do? They can't stop it, so they start threatening. In verse 7 of chapter 4, now it came about when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arab, and the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites heard that the repair of the wall of Jerusalem went on, and that the breaches began to be closed, they were very angry. And all of them conspired together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause a disturbance in it. But we pray to our God, and because of them, we set up a guard against them day and night. Their answer in response to the threat was basically, okay, we're going to be on our guard. They trusted in God, but they also put guards up. But all the problems didn't come just from without. They also had problems within. The next problem and opposition they faced was their own disappointments, their own discouragement. Starting with verse 10, thus in Judea it was said, the strength of the burden bearers is failing, yet there is much rubbish, and we ourselves are unable to rebuild the wall. They're basically saying, you know, there's just too much work. There's just too much to go. And we're getting tired. And in verse 11, and our enemies said, they will not know or see until we come upon them and kill them and put a stop to the work. And they're basically saying, we can't watch while building. They'll be on us before we can see it. And so we're slowing down because we're constantly having to looking over our shoulder in case they might appear. And when it came about in verse 12 that the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times, they'll come up against us from every place where you may turn. Then I stationed men in the lowest parts of the space between the walls, the exposed places, and I stationed the people and families and their swords and spears and bows. When I saw their fear, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people. Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers and your sons and your daughters and your wives and your houses. And it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, then all of us returned to work on the wall, each one to his own work. And then it came about from that day on that half of my servants carried on the work while the other half of them held the spears, the shields, and the bows, and the breastplates, and the captains were behind the whole house of Judea. Those who were rebuilding the wall and those who carried the burdens took their load with one hand doing the work and with the other holding a weapon. As for the builders, each wore his sword girded at his side as he built, while the trumpeter stood near. And I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, the work is great and extensive, and we are separated on the wall from one another. At whatever place you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. So he carried the work with half of them holding spears from dawn until stars appeared. At the time I also said to the people, let each man and his servant spend the night within Jerusalem so that they may be a guard for us by night and a laborer by day. So neither I, my brothers, my servants, nor the men, the guards who followed me, none of us removed our clothes. Each one took his weapon, even to the water. They didn't take time to change because there was too much work to be done. But I want you to notice some things that are mentioned along here. They protected themselves. One of the problems was that it was too much work and they were getting tired. Nehemiah solved two problems at once. They put on rotating shifts. Half of them guarded, half of them worked, and they switched off. That gave half of them a chance to rest and gave them protection at the same time. The other were demoralized. Yes, they were tired. Yet Nehemiah solved each of the problems as they were faced with it. That didn't work for the those who opposed them. And so the next thing they tried to do is do some extortion. Chapter 5, verse 1. Now there was a great outcry of the people and their wives against the Jewish brothers. For there were those who said, our sons and our daughters are many. Therefore let us get grain that we may eat and live. And there were others who said, we are mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our houses, that we might get grain because of the famine. And also there were those who said, we have borrowed money for the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. And now our flesh is like the flesh of our brothers, and our children are like their children. Yet behold, we are forcing our sons and our daughters to be slaves, and some of our daughters are forced into bondage already, and we are helpless because our fields and vineyards belong to others. What was basically happened is there was a famine not too long before Nehemiah showed up. So there wasn't a lot of food. But now people are working on the wall and they don't have time to work their farms. And they're starting to mortgage their places, especially the poor were mortgaging their places so that they would have enough funds to live on while they're working on the wall. Problem was people were taking advantage of the poor and charging excessive interest at the same time. Then it says, I was very angry when I heard their outcry and these words. I had consulted with myself and contended with the nobles and the rulers, saying, you are extracting usury for each one from his brother. Therefore I held a great assembly against them, and I said, we, according to our ability, have redeemed our Jewish brethren who were sold to the nations. Now would you sell your brothers that they may be sold to us? And they were silent and could not find a word to say. And again I said, the thing which you are doing is not good. Should you not walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations of our enemies? And likewise, I, my brothers, my servants are lending them money and grain. Please, let us leave off this usury. And they agreed and they stopped. They stopped charging interest and they released those who were being sold into bondage. It wasn't fair, it wasn't right, when people were working to take advantage of those who were trying to serve God. Those who were outside then tried to do compromise. Jumping to chapter 6, in verse 1 it says, Now about when there was reported to Sanballat the Tobiah to Gishon the Arab, and to the rest of our enemies, that I rebuilt the wall, and that no breach remained in it, although at that time I had not yet set up the doors and the gates, that Sanballat and Gishon sent a message to me saying, come, let us meet together at Shepharim, to the plain of Ono. But they were planning to harm me. So I sent messengers to them saying, I'm doing the great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? And they sent messages to me four times in this manner, and I answered them all in the same way. So four times they basically said, hey, let's compromise. Let's have a meeting. All they wanted to do was interrupt the work. And probably they had a trap laid out. They probably were planning to assassinate Nehemiah when he was outside the protection of the rest of the people. But Nehemiah saw through it and wouldn't go. He says, I'm too busy. So next thing they tried was to do slander. Verse 5, it says, then Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand, and in it was written, it is reported among the nations in Geshemu says that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore you are rebuilding the wall, and you are to be their king according to these reports. You have also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you. A king is in Judea, and now it will be reported to the king according to the reports. So come now, let us take counsel together. We heard you're planning to rebel against the king, and you're going to set yourself up as king, and you've got people telling everybody that you're going to be the next king, and if you don't come meet with us, we're going to tell the king. He won't be happy about that. That didn't work either. Because I sent a message to him saying, such things that you're saying have not been done, and you're inventing them in your own mind. And for all of them are trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged with the work and it will not be done. But now, O God, strengthen my hands. He knew what was happening. He just says, that's false. And kept on going. Then they tried treachery. And when I entered the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Methabel, who was confined at home, he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. And they are coming to kill you at night. So basically he's saying, you got so many enemies, let's go hide out in the temple and lock ourselves in, because that way we at least know that you're safe. But again, it was a hidden plot. He said, but I said, should a man like me flee? Could one such as I go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. Then I perceived that surely God had not sent him, but he uttered his prophecy against me because of Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He was hired for this reason, that I might become frightened and act accordingly and sin, so that they might have an evil report in order to have that they could reproach me. Jews, regular Jews are not of the tribe of Levi, don't belong in the temple. Not only that, they would take advantage of the fact that if he did go into the temple, look, he's afraid. They couldn't find something to pin on him, so they were trying to fabricate one. Make a situation where they could basically state things not as they actually were, but as they might appear. But again, Nehemiah saw through it. And the end result was the walls were built. It says in verse 15, so the wall was completed on the 25th of the month of Elul in 52 days. I want you to think about it. Think about all the opposition we just read through. All of that was condensed in 52 days. This is not something that was spread out over several years' time. He was getting hit right and left and right and left constantly with all sorts of problems, one right after another, constantly, as they rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem's not a small city. And the walls around Jerusalem are not small walls. It was quite a feat that they had accomplished in putting the walls back up. The remainder of the book of Nehemiah, starting with chapter 7 and going through 13, is basically we rebuilt the walls. There is a restoration then of the people. Ezra had started. Ezra's still around, too. And getting the people to follow God. And Nehemiah then works at getting the people back to doing what God wanted them to do. Not just in words, but actual action. In chapter 7, he then organizes the remnant. And has a registration set up so that they can register themselves as being Jews. And we find in chapter 7, verse 4, that the city was mostly empty at this time. So now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few and the houses were not built. Then my God put it in my heart to assemble the nobles, the officials, and the people to be enrolled by genealogies. Then I found the book of the genealogy of those who came up first, in which I found the following record. And it goes on to list those who had came. In chapter 8, there's when Nehemiah, or not Nehemiah, but Ezra, reads the law to the people. They got the walls up, they're protected. We listed out who's now truly members of the Israelite nation. And they found the law and they begin reading it to everybody. In chapter 8, verse 1, and all the people gathered as one man in the square which was in front of the water gate, and they asked Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had given to Israel. Then Ezra the priest brought the law before the assembly of men, women, and all who could listen and understand with understanding on the first day of the seventh month. And he read from it before the square, which is in front of the water gate, from early morning until midday, in the presence of men and women, those who could understand, and all the people were attentive to the law, the book of the law. Everybody listened to what God had to say. And the reaction we find in chapter 8, starting with verse 8, it says, and they read from the book of the book from the law of God, translating to get some sense so that they could understand the reading. Then Nehemiah, who was the governor, and Ezra, the priests and the scribes and the Levites who taught the people, said to all the people, this day is holy to the Lord your God. Do not mourn or weep, for all the people were weeping when they heard the words of the law. And he said to them, go eat and of the fat and drink of the sweet, and send portions to him who has nothing prepared, for this day is holy to our Lord. Do not be grieved, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. So the Levites calmed all the people, saying, be still, for the day is holy, and do not be grieved. And all the people went away to eat and to drink and send portions, and to celebrate a great festival, because they understood the words which had been made known to them. Think about how much of a joy it was for them to know what God wanted. They were upset at first because they knew what they were not doing. But Nehemiah turned around and said, no, you should be thrilled to know what God does want. In chapter 9, because of this reading, they renew the covenant between themselves and God. So the renewal of the covenant in chapter 9. And they confessed that they had done wrong. In chapter 9, verse 32, it said, now therefore our God, the great, the mighty, the awesome God, who does keep covenant and loving kindness, do not let all the hardship seem insignificant before thee, which has come upon us, our kings, our princes, our priests, our prophets, our fathers, and on all the people for the days of the kings of Assyria to this day. However, thou art just in all that thou that has come upon us, for thou hast dealt faithfully, but we have acted wickedly. For our kings, our leaders, our priests, and our fathers have not kept thy law, or paid attention to thy commandments, and thy admonitions which thou hast admonished them. But they in their own kingdom, with thy great goodness, which thou didst give them, with bread and rich land, which thou didst set before them, did not serve thee, or turn from their evil deeds. Behold, we are slaves today, and as to the land which our fathers, which thou didst give to our fathers, to eat of its fruit and its bounty, behold, we are slaves on it. And its abundant produce is for the kings, whom thou hast set over us because of our sins. They also ruled over our bodies, and over our cattle as they please, and so we are in great distress. Now because of all this, we are making an agreement in writing, and on the sealed document are the names of our leaders, our Levites, and our priests. Basically, they confessed that they were in wrong. God was in the right, did what he was said to do. They understood it, and they were reaffirming that they would follow God's law. In chapter 10, then is a list of those who ratified that covenant. So there's the ratifiers of the covenant, as well as the stipulations that they were going to follow in following that covenant. In chapter 11, then, was the resettlement. I got room over here. So chapter 11 is the resettlement of Jerusalem. Remember, the city was mostly empty. They brought people in. They did so by casting lots, saying who should move into the city. So now the leaders of the people that lived in Jerusalem and by the rest of the people cast lots, bringing 1 out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, while 9/10 remained in other cities. And the people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem. You think of a privilege, right? No, it's the other way around. The rest of the place has places to farm. there's going to be a hardship to live in a city that has to be restarted. But 1 out of 10 volunteered to go, and they cast lots to choose who would actually go. Then in chapter 12 is a list, first part of it is a list of all the priests and the Levites who were serving. And then at the end of chapter 12 is a dedication of the wall. And of the people. At the end of chapter 12. And then chapter 13 was the restoration of the people. Even though they had said we were going to renew the covenant, we were going to follow it, they still hadn't really, it was mostly words, they hadn't really did it. At the beginning of chapter 13, starting with verse 4, there was corruption among the city officials. Nehemiah basically stepped in and said, no, you're not going to act corruptly. Starting with verse 15, we find out they've been ignoring the Sabbath. They weren't following the Sabbath laws. Nehemiah put into force that they had to follow the Sabbath laws. In fact, he ordered that the gates would be closed so people had to follow the Sabbath laws. And then starting with chapter 13, verse 23, they were violating the marriage laws. And again, Nehemiah had to step in and say, no, you will end those marriages that were not proper, that violated the laws. What's really interesting, though, is that Nehemiah shows what a layman basically can do. Nehemiah is not a king or a son of a king. He's just a official that worked for Artaxerxes. He was just a cupbearer. Because he took in mind saying this is what needs to be done, he saw something that needed to be done. He wasn't a priest, he wasn't a Levite, he wasn't a prophet. He received no orders from God to do what he saw needed to be done. And yet he served so courageously. He served with a whole heart. And he turned the people of Jerusalem completely around. Not only did he give them a wall to protect the people, he restored the people, made them follow what God said. It describes the impact just one person made in the world. Because he believed that that was right. So many times when we look at things and we see something needs to be done and we sit there with our hands underneath us and not do anything. Or we might pray but we don't do anything. Or we might talk about and complain about things but so often we don't do anything about it. Nehemiah shows that when somebody prays, they ought to do. And when God's behind it, he'll make it happen. And one person can turn a whole town around, can turn a whole nation around, if God's behind it. Hope you'll think about those things. If there's anyone here tonight that's not a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of brethren on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of selection?